The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Fast am I, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Manx Radio. Today, it's all about FC Isle of Man. Formed way back in 2019, but obviously because of the COVID pandemic, nothing could really happen until 2021. If you've been to see the Ravens, of course, they play at the Bowl in Douglas, the Burner Bowl. One promotion under their belt so far, so what's for the future? Today on Man in Line, Jill Christians here, chair of FC Isle of Man, director of football, Lee Dixon. And also the man who commentates for Manx Radio on AM 1368, Rob Pritchard, is here. First of all, to Jill Christian. Jill, just one question. If you'd known now, known then what you know now, would you still have started FC Isle of Man?
Yes, I think so. I think good days and bad days, but when it's good, it's fantastic.
Well,
so,
you're a football fan, or football player as well.
Former football player, big football fan, mum of two boys. So when you see the Bernabeu packed, there's nothing better. So yeah, for everything, it's worth it.
So what was the vision for FC Isle of Man, Jill?
Well, I think it's morphed. It's morphed from what it was first envisaged. Obviously, it was set up by Paul Lee and a few others before my involvement, with the aim of developing football on Ireland. So to open a pathway for players to play a better standard of football in the UK and further afield. But it's morphed into something a lot more than that. And I think the community angle to what FC Isle of Man has become, always a community club, has just been phenomenal. So focus is still on football development, but it's become something much bigger.
I mean, that's, as you say, it's got deep roots. I think it was started, they were talking for it over 12 years ago, serious really in 2018. Lee, at what point did you get involved with FC Isle of Man?
I was pretty much there at the very start. It all come from not a great situation, really. We were we got knocked out of the County Cup with the Football Association's team. Bit of a low ebb, and Paul Jones just met with me and Steve Burns and said, like, we can't go on like this. It can't just be the only thing we have in our season, the County Cup, and then you get knocked out and you don't have any more games. And said, like, I think we could do this, and come up with the idea that we could try and get that team that everyone had always spoken about into the pyramid in England.
Yeah.
Sounded a little bit crazy at the time, but I said, I'm in. If you want to go for it, I'll support you and do whatever I can. The same with Steve Burns. And then from there, Paul went away, got a few more people involved in the background, because he wanted to go down the model of like Barcelona and teams like Benfica, whereby it was going to be like a sporting club that would own various sporting teams. So he'd enrolled the help of Tony Keaton, who come on board then, who understood that sort of like the corporate model and how that needed to work to become a charitable trust and things like that. So from there it just started growing, and we ended up with a team. I think we had nine, just to name a couple. There was obviously Paul, me, Steve Burns, and then it was Tony Keaton, Les Nicol, Mark Potts. We had Gary Waitman, who was the first ever chairman of the club. We had Raj, Ty Smith. I hope I haven't missed anyone there. But yeah, we've become a bit of a working group, and we met every Friday and Saturday for 3 hours at a time. And it was just a crazy sort of 18 months really, where we try to get the club running.
So the important thing is to basically get a representative team from the Isle of Man that's going to punch higher, really, punch above its weight, and also make some sort of impact in an English league.
Yeah, well, listen, it creates opportunity, really, I think, for like local footballers in general, but more so the younger players, because me and Paul had been lucky enough to be able to get off the island and go away to professional teams on what is now called a scholarship. It was an apprenticeship then, and we went into that side of the game. So not many men are lucky enough to do it. We have had good success, but no one's actually got right to the top of the tree yet. It was a bit of a scaffolded thing, really. It was to give the lads exposure in England on a weekly basis, rather than like me and Paul did it. You go away for a week on trial and you either make it or you don't, and you get a yes or a no, and it's a difficult scenario. You have one bad week and it's a no. You know, we have a great week at a yes. So I think it's to give young players opportunity to try and climb up the pyramid. And I think we've started making a few inroads into that with players who've gone higher.
Yeah.
And hopefully going forward, as we exist on a yearly basis and in 5 and 10 years, it becomes more of a norm, and we might get the odd one or two that then kick on into the Football League. And potentially we would love to get a Matt Letizia, Graham Lasso coming off the Isle of Man, and then we've got the aspiration trail that Cycling have managed to create through the likes of Mark Cavendish and Kenyick and all these people that have now someone to look up to and say you can do it.
Lee, what's your aim? How high can FC Isle of Man go?
I think it's a tough one. I know when the club was getting set up, Paul's talking about obviously this plan in 15 years, 20 years maybe of heading towards the Football League. I don't think now we're into the process. I don't like to look that far ahead and think that that's even a possibility. I think we've got to be realistic in where we are at the minute. I would like to think we can get to the Northern Premier League, which you've got teams in that are still full-time, who are spending a lot of money, a massive budgets. So I think that's realistic. I think anyone that's watched us this year, Andy, would agree that we've missed out on the playoffs by 8 points. And you look at the run we had in the middle of the season, that was really, really bad. I think next season, going into our fourth season, I think we will be more than capable of making the playoffs. And anyone who knows who was part of the first season and then playoffs, we are capable of beating anybody if we can get them down at the bowl on our day. And then obviously after that, you take the next step and worry about that then.
Okay. If you want to get in touch with Jill or Lee and Rob Pritchard as well, then text 166177, email studio@manxradio.com. WhatsApp 166 177, call 66 13 68. Rob Pritchard, you've been there wearing two jackets sometimes to keep warm at the bowl throughout those winter months. How have you gauged FC Isle of Man's progress?
Well, I'll probably say that it's been a bit of a mix. Obviously, it was a roller coaster first season. I think I described it as a bit of, if you'd written a Hollywood script for non-league, it would probably be a little bit too ludicrous what happened with FC Isle of Man making the playoffs and then going through that way. I was actually asked to do a short piece in one of the club's programmes this season, and one of the questions was around how they found it in the North West Counties Premier Division. And I think the way I described it was that whilst the first season was maybe the honeymoon, maybe the second season has been a bit of the reality, really, in terms of that step up in quality. This is considered, particularly at step five in the English non-league system, this is considered a very high calibre league across all the regions across England. And I think the team have maybe found that out a little bit, but it's all part of the learning process. You know, you've got FC Isle of Man, which is only a few years old. They're coming up against clubs that have been established for decades and some for over 100 years as well. And they've had to work their way through those periods and through different challenges and different obstacles. So you can't draw too many conclusions if we're talking in the greater picture, but at the same time, I think a lot of lessons have had to be learned and have been learned in some cases, both on and off the pitch.
Jill, when Lee was mentioning money then, I saw the blood drain out of your face. FC Isle of Man is propped up by a team of volunteers. You obviously pay commercial rate for some services, for certain things, but where does the money come from?
I think the finances have been a key concern throughout, and unfortunately, as with everything, with success come supporters, and with supporters come finances. So we need that success to feed in. On the finances, we're really fortunate. We've had some excellent sponsors. We've had the support of Manx Telecom for 4 years, sort of from the outset. They've just announced that support has come to an end, but you know that support was invaluable at a really critical time. We've got two or three other key sponsors, obviously IFGL. We've now got the support of the Isle of Man Steam Packet. We've got Newfield, some smaller organisations such as B&B Furniture. But every year we need in sponsorship a significant amount. And the supporters coming to the ground, to break even, we have to get 1,100 at the ground. We've got a core of fantastic fans. Our average gate's about 880. But that means that we're losing money every match. So we have some great sponsors. We've got fantastic volunteers. We need more sponsors. And we do now have some support from Visit Isle of Mon as well, which has been absolutely essential.
I think also the fact that, as Rob was saying, it was a honeymoon the first season, and with the level of success success, with success comes expectation of success. And people, because the bowl is a professional place, compared to some of the places that you play away at, it's a fair old palace. You obviously look very carefully at how you pitch the ticket prices, because do you think sometimes people expect, if you like, they want a bit too much, because you are an amateur club, very much an amateur club, and you're reliant on volunteers. So how do you view that?
I think that we've been, from the outset, everything that we've done has been at the most professional level. If you look at our media, for example, the standard of the media releases and things that we put out is ultra professional, and that's from the top to the bottom. When the teams arrive on the island, they're met in person. We put a pre-match meal on. Not everyone will know, but we have to pay for the visiting team. We have to pay for their flights. We have to pay for a pre-match meal. The coaches. So it's not just a case of paying for our travel, it's a case of paying for their travel.
I think that's very well worth restating, because the rumour goes around that sometimes you don't pay, but you do have to pay. You have to pay for, as well as paying for FC Alaman when you go to away games, and let's face it, every game's an away game, because nobody's on the Isle of Man. So, but you have to pay the costs of visiting teams.
We have to pay for 25 players and officials for every team that comes to the island, and on a number of occasions we have to pay for the officials as well. So in a season we pay for about 580 people, including players and officials from other clubs, to come to the island. And that comes at a huge expense.
Well, I'm in my head, that's many tens of thousands of pounds.
It's hundreds of thousands of pounds, yeah. About
197, I think it was.
On visiting teams, right. Yeah.
And as well, you have to pay for yourself to get off the Isle of Man. And I remember, which game was it, Rob, that was postponed four or five times?
It was Earlham, I believe.
So, and every time that you were going to fly to Manchester to play at Earlham, the darn thing was called off. Did you get any money back?
Well, Loganair have been fantastic, actually, in terms of a travel sponsor. They're very flexible with us. So, yes, we do get some money back. But obviously, as you've alluded to, sometimes the players have been at the airport when the fixtures have been cancelled. So Loganair is as flexible as they can be, but within limitation.
Do you get the air tax back, the passenger tax?
Yes.
You do get that back.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Here's one from Alki. Why don't you sell beer at the bowl? You'd make more money if you sold beer at the bowl.
It's on our radar. It's something we've been desperate to do for a while. There's complications. We don't own the bowl, and therefore, obviously, as you'll know, Isle of Man licensing, we have to get approval from various organisations to then try and apply for a licence. And it is hopefully something that we're going to do very shortly.
I've heard away fans commenting on that. Normally it's in the Pinewood before the match and down, but so other clubs do have licence facilities.
Other clubs primarily make their money on visiting teams and the bar and catering. We haven't got that facility yet at the bowl, so it means our income has to come from other areas at the moment.
Any chance of alcohol?
There is discussions ongoing at the minute, and I don't think we're a million miles away, and I think at first it would probably be a dip your toe in the water kind of thing, whereby it might happen at two or three games in the first season, and then if all going well and it's managed correctly on our part, we would probably look to get a licence for every single game. But there is discussions going on in the background, and there's been some positive steps forward very recently, and we are hoping to make an announcement hopefully within maybe the next month or so on that.
Okay, it's text to 403 that just said, afternoon to Jill and Lee and Rob. Can you ask Jill or Lee, what gives you the drive to keep going forward each season, Lee?
Me? Well, I'll use a phrase that someone that works for me just within the last hour said to me. We were talking about the amount of stress it brings into your life around your work and your family and that. And we were chatting, he said to me that I love it. He said, you love it. It's like adrenaline, the run on adrenaline. And I've not been much different, to be honest, since I was young when I started going away. I've never not been involved in football in some way. And, that there's hundreds of people in Manx football that are exactly the same, running their clubs, like doing everything within their clubs. when it's happening, it's stressful, and sometimes you question yourself, you know, why do you do it? But like Jill alluded to, when it's good, them good times and the nice letters we get into the club, or the difference we can make in the community, it gives you that little lift. It gives you the energy to carry on. And ultimately, when I don't have it in my life, I'm twiddling my thumbs within weeks, like the season finishes and you're looking for something to get stuck into because you're bored. Okay. I just love being involved in it.
I can't say the same thing, I should say. I'm definitely not that. I've definitely got not the same mentality.
Well, you're a professional person. You're in the legal field. You have stress as well. You've got a full time. You've got a family to run as well. And you took this on.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, I think, I mean, in fairness, the, as Lee alluded to, the lives it touches and the difference it's made to children in the community, adults and families, that's what drives it for me.
Just can you be a bit more detailed about when you say community, what do you do?
Well, for example, the number of children at the bowl on a Saturday night watching the football that are now hero worshipping the players. You know, they could, for families, you know, parents going along to the game, watching a good level of football, giving them something positive to do on a Saturday night. And, you know, we've got so many stories of differences it's made to children who have perhaps, you know, maybe have autism, don't like to go out, but they've been coming to watch FC Alaman. It's become their hobby. It gives them, it encourages them to go out and take part, and, you know, it makes a difference to everyday people's lives, is the reality.
I just wanted to draw you come back. Now, you mentioned Manx Telecom have, obviously, their sponsorship has ended. So let's cut to the chase. Oh, are you looking for sponsors?
Yes. Yeah, we've got quite a big hole to fill on that. We are very fortunate with some good sponsors. IFGL have come in. They're contributing a significant amount financially and sort of support. But we've lost our what was our main sponsor. So
interestingly, also a colleague of mine supports a team in the lower. I think he's in Division Two. They don't issue a programme. They've come to the conclusion that they couldn't. But the FC Alaman programme is a bit of a collector's item now. It's absolutely top notch, printed to very high standards. Who puts that together?
Our finance director, Russ, has a full-time member of staff that assists him with that. And then Russ is also assisted by some of our fantastic supporters who contribute pieces. So, As you've said, it's very professional. Everything that the club does is very professional.
And it's interesting. I'm trying to think. Rob, what are they? The people who go to all the grounds, what are they called?
Groundhoppers.
And the bowl is getting groundhoppers, isn't it?
It has indeed, particularly in the last one or two seasons where word's starting getting round about FC Alaman, of course. It's different if you're one of these groundhoppers based in the northwest, like you see plenty of them are. It's, of course, a bigger financial and time commitment to come over to the island, but there have been the odd groundhopper heading to the Isle of Man over the last one or two seasons.
Just let me add to that. We actually had three groups of Germans visit the Isle of Man this season, who's one supported Bayern Munich, one was Frankfurt, and I think the other one was Stuttgart, who just randomly come to the Isle of Man for the weekend just to watch the game. And we brought them up into the boardroom and they met Paul and got photos taken and things, but they all said they're definitely coming back next season. That's really random to get that many sort of people from that far afield that just come to the Isle of Man from Germany over the weekend to watch our game.
Okay, and this cuts to the point as well, Jill Christian. Visitors to the Isle of Man and the amount of people that have been brought, technically, well, of course, by definition, it's off season because it's the middle of November and December. How many people does FC Isle of Man bring to the Isle of Man?
So we estimate about 3,500 visitors to the Isle of Man that come to watch our games. About 600 of those are visitors we pay for per our rule requirements, and then the rest are fans that come to watch the games.
So I remember when, was it Berry, Rob? How many did they bring?
Well, if we're talking this season, there was rumours of around 1,000 that had come over, but because of disruption to the game, because of the flight disruption for the Bury team, it got moved to the Sunday morning. I think there was quite a few Bury fans who then had to head home on the Sunday, but it was still in the region. Understand, there's no confirmed figure here, but around 650 to 700 were still in the ground.
So you've got an enterprise, Jill, that brings that amount of people. What, how do you get on with Visit Isle of Man?
Very well now. As I suggested earlier, they are now giving us good support, which has been incredibly helpful. That's financial support. There's also other support. You know, for example, are now Allegiance with the Steam Packet. They help Steam Packet Holidays are helping visitors with their booking, which includes football tickets. So we really needed that. There was some desperate times a couple of years ago, and that support from Visit has been essential.
Okay. Lee, I want to ask you, because Lee, you've been in the football game on the Isle of Man for a long time. He's older than he looks. does FC Isle of Man take anything away from the game on the Isle of Man? Does it affect other teams?
I suppose it depends who you speak to, really, to be honest.
Creaming off the best talent?
I think we've enhanced local football. I think we've made it better. At first, obviously, you had teams like Corinthians who lost probably most of their first team in the first season. I think if you look back now, when we're sort of 3 years into it, I would say if you look at the cup finals and the people that have won the trophies, I think it's been more spread out across Manx football. I think there's teams that never, or certainly weren't before we started competing for trophies and for league titles, who now are. And I think for them it's made it better. If you looked at, say, maybe a Corinthians, who've lost their players, they're not winning what they were. But I think across the board, it's made it miles more interesting. It's in a more of an even playing field, I would think. I think that everyone would have to agree that. And so you'll have a lot of people who think it's been fantastic, and you'll have the people in the background, as you always get, saying they don't believe it has been great. What we've managed to do is we've managed to avoid having any conflict with kickoff times.
And specifically, the Ravens kick off at 6 p.m.
Yeah, in our constitution, we agreed with the FA at the start, when we were trying to sell it to the member clubs and get this through, that we would never kick off where it coincided with local football, so that we weren't taking people away out of the local game, spectators and stuff. That will continue. I think it works well both ways. I think it allows people to stay watching local football, but also then come down and follow the local team that are functioning in the pyramid over in England. And I think as time goes on, I would like to think everyone's views on that are softening, and they realise that there's a massive benefit in us doing that.
Okay, your director of football, Paul Jones, is?
The manager.
Okay, yeah. Here's one that's going to get you in trouble then. Gary G says, who's the best player you've worked with at FC Isle of Man? The best player.
The best player I've worked with at FC Isle of Man?
Yeah.
It'd be really, really hard to come up with a player, because if I go back to the lads I worked with when I was part of the coaching team for the first 18 months, we had numerous ones. I mean, you can mention the golden oldies like Chris Bass Jr., Sean Quay. It goes on and on. Frank Jones, obviously he's getting older now and getting nearer the end of his career, still involved. But you could, for different reasons, you could pick many, many players. We've got young lads coming through now who are outstanding in the level of football that we're playing at, that I think can really kick on. Charlie Higgins has been one of them. I think the fans in the last 10 to 12 games have seen him starting to really grow, and starting to see how much talent he's actually got. So I wouldn't like to pin it down to one, but we've certainly had, there's probably been five or six that I've liked working with.
Okay, Rob Pritchard, who's impressed you
this season or in general?
Both, really. Overall and this season.
Well, in general, if you're looking over the last couple of seasons, I mean, it's not just looking at the likes of goals and assists, but you look at appearances as well in and around, say, injuries and suspensions, etc. And the two that really stand out in that sense will be Sean Dahl, who, let's not forget, at the start of last season, spent quite a few months out with quite a nasty knee injury. He's now back in and playing as well and still scoring goals at this level. The other that has really stood out to me over the last couple of years is Alex Maitland, the centre-back, and I think it speaks for itself, just that, you know, obviously from the very first season when Chris Bass Sr. was in charge, right through now with Paul Jones at the helm as well, he has remained a constant within that side.
When Jill was talking about the impact that the players have on youngsters, you see it week in, week out. The young boys, young girls love interacting with the players, don't they?
They do. So we're, for those who don't know where our commentary point is, we're situated just in front of the FA clubhouse underneath the sheltered side of the bowl, and over to our right hand side is where the players come on and off the pitch at the beginning and the end of, you know, half time or full time as well. And we do see it towards the end, and they're all asking for photos and signatures with the FC Isle of Man players even before the game as well, when they're coming into the ground just getting ready for the game. And also, I think it's worth pointing out that fans young and old here have been showing appreciation towards towards the visiting teams as well a lot of the time as well. They're given a good reception when they come here, regardless of whether they win or lose as well. But in terms of the local fans here, and particularly the younger fans, as has already been pointed out already, there seems to be a real connection between them, and the players themselves look happy to interact and speak with people.
And also, who's the guy with the banner that says conspiracy? Does anybody know? Who's in charge of that?
No, it'll be one of the 12th man, I think. Is it possibly Ray McMullins, is it? Or Dave McMullins, one of them?
It could be one of the McMullins, but we've got the conspiracy are a real core group of, you know, even on an away game, sometimes you're getting 50, 60 travelling fans from the island, and they're a close-knit group of friends, and, you know, that support for the club and for each other, phenomenal.
Okay, right, we've got Ken. Hi, Ken.
Good afternoon to you. Having played for Morgan Reserves as an amateur with semi-professionals, and Windenshaw, who got both their teams promoted, I presume one of them is definitely semi-professional. How many teams in the current league are semi-professional as to do all amateur teams? And I'm just working, you know, if they're the Ironman team got promoted, how would they be fair in the higher division?
So what I would like to say is that every team in our league pays people money. It would be hard to know exactly how much, but all the teams do get paid. Some teams obviously have a lot bigger budgets. Bury are obviously paying enormous money out in comparison to most because of the size of the gates they get and the finances that brings. But every single team other than the Isle of Man are paying their players money to play for them. You may get the odd one playing with young who maybe don't get paid, but I'd say it probably covers 90% of most squads in our league.
Ken?
Yes, because I always found it, I didn't bother playing for more reserves and amateur with semi-professionals, but cricket always bothered me when you were playing and one of the players was a pro and got paid, and it was all, I was thinking back, I always thought, well, that's a bit unfair. So I'm just wondering, if the Isle of Man got promoted, would they look for more sponsorship, obviously, but you'd lose your better players like you will do now.
Interesting. Are you looking for, I mean, with that level of success, thank you, Ken, good to hear from you. If things get better, you'll have the problem of success, Jill.
Very much so, and we've got a limited pool of talent because, you know, our idea is that the players come from the Isle of Man.
It's not like you can import people from around the northwest of the Isle of Man, because obviously they'd have relocation problems.
No, and that's not the objective of the club, because as I said earlier, it's about development of on-island players. So with success will come challenges, but you know, it only takes one, you know, like Lee said, a Matt Letissier, Guernsey recently have had a couple of players that have been signed professionally, and they've got buy-on clauses, etc. There's various things we can do to make for the long-term sustainability that may mean that we might be able to pay in the future.
Okay, this is Texter 382. You can answer this or not, Jill. What's the annual cost for running the Ravens?
Around, I think, about £420,000.
And then you've got to meet that with gate receipts and sponsorship, yeah?
Yeah, travel costs are about 250. Sponsorship is about 120. You know, the rest is fundraising, etc.
You also do, I've noticed in the programme, the sponsorship for each player, is that right?
Yeah, that's a sort of a smaller amount, but what we've had to do is we've had to look at, frankly, every possible scenario on sponsorship that we can do.
Okay. Tam in Williston says, I was a fan of St Mary's when Lee played. Wonderful team then as well. Good times?
Yeah, they were, yeah. Back end of the 90s, early 2000s and that. We had a fantastic team back then for local football anyway. Broke many records. Fantastic club to be a part of, not just on the pitch but socially as well.
Okay. How do you scout for players for FC Isle of Man?
Well, Paul has his own way of doing stuff. When me and Chris were running the team, we would go out every single Saturday and we made sure we went around the Isle of Man and we were visible. We went and watched second division games as well as first division. If people rang us up about specific players, maybe managers or people from within certain clubs, we'd always try and go to watch to give them that a fair crack of the whip, really. And we found it worked well for us. We picked up a lot of players throughout the course when we got near the end of our first season and we were going the cup, and we were trying to rest players for the running on the league to get into the playoffs. We started using a younger group of players, and probably 95% of them had lads who had been out and watched them. We knew a little bit about from a Saturday afternoon.
Okay, here's a note in from, this is 557, this is for Jill. I had a season ticket for 22-23. When I tried to get one for 23-24, they were sold out. But the bowl is never at full capacity, so why can't there be an unlimited amount of season tickets? So apart from supporters, other people could spontaneously buy them for presents, guaranteed form of income.
I'm surprised to hear that. I mean, I'd have loved us to sell out of season tickets. In fact, the take-up on the season tickets was very slim. So I don't know whether that was a system glitch or something, but we're definitely, if anyone wants a season ticket, and they'll be getting released soon, now we know the fixture, the number of fixtures, we've never sold out,
sadly.
How much
is a season ticket?
To be announced, because obviously we were waiting on the league announcements as to how many fixtures we've had. We've just found out we've got 24 teams in our league, which is the same as last season, and that will obviously impact on the price or not.
Okay, I mentioned earlier on the fact that this is this is relatively recent. Other people have tried models like this here, there and everywhere. You think of what's happening in Guernsey with the rugby that happened in Jersey. Jill, is the board confident?
Yes, I am actually, and I think the rest of the board is, and I don't think we'd be on the board continuing into another season if we weren't. We had some very difficult times about 18 months ago, but we've got new sponsors on board, as I said, some support from Visit, provided that continues. Very confident. If it doesn't, not at all confident. But
okay. So as far as government's concerned, who do you talk to in government?
Well, Visit Isle of Man have given us a lot of support to date in the last season, which we really needed.
Do you think they appreciate how many people you bring over?
Yes. I think now that is appreciated. It's not just 1,100 Bury fans. It's actually, as Rob alluded to, most teams that are visiting now they've got a lot of groundhoppers, but they've got their own fans as well, and we're always getting a significant number of away fans.
Okay, Lee Dixon is Director of Football at FC Isle of Man, and it was announced last week, I think, with Rob Pritchard on the Sports Show. You've got a festival of football.
Yes, we have, on the 19th, 20th and 21st of July. The start of what we hope to be, grow it back towards the old festival, albeit it won't be on the professional model. It'll be done with non-league teams and preferably fan-owned or community-owned football clubs. We want to deal with people who are very much in the mindset that we are.
Because the old steam packet tournaments were very popular, weren't they?
Yeah, they were, and I believe, even using the model of using the non-league teams, I think we can get as many, if not more, people to the Isle of Man. I know, I think near the end of the Steam Packet Festival, I don't know whether the visit numbers were fantastic, to be honest, but I think by using the right clubs who've got big followings, talking about teams like your Berries and your Chesters, your Macclesfields, who've been bankrupt and had to go out of the league to make their communities appreciate what the football clubs were within them.
So who's in this tournament?
This tournament here, we've got Chester, Radcliffe Borough and Lancaster City coming. We did have Dulwich Hamlet, but they had to pull out at the last minute due to off-field problems that they're having. But a lot of the clubs I spoke to, unfortunately, it was such a late-in-the-day decision by me. I went to the likes of Macclesfield and Bury, and unfortunately they committed elsewhere, but they've sort of said next season would be a no-brainer because we'd pick it up around December, January for the following summer before people make any plans. And I would like to think bringing the likes of your Macclesfield, Bury teams along them lines with maybe the teams that are coming now, I'm confident that we can bring multiple thousands of people to the Isle of Man over a summer.
Okay,
summer
so festival. What date is it again this year?
It's going to be on the 19th, 20th and 21st. It'll be one game on the Friday night, one game on the Saturday afternoon and two games on the Sunday.
Okay, and how do people get tickets? Just pitch up or can you get
so
them?
So they're online now on our website. You can go on and buy them. We've got an early bird that goes up till the 31st of May, which is £20 for all four games and £10 for a concession ticket for all four. And that will then go up to £24 for all four games and £12 for concessions after the 31st.
Okay, what's the website, Jill?
Oh, is fcisleofman.im,
I think.
I think off the top of my head.
fcisleofman.im, okay. We're live today with FC Isle of Man, with the Ravens. No Raymond, by the way. If you've not been, you've not seen Raymond, including that great YouTube of when Raymond lost his head. Very funny. FC Isle of Man, the Ravens, are on Man in Line today. Just a quick word, by the way, when Man in Line finishes, it's our 60th anniversary year. And every Wednesday, we have a 60th anniversary Kelly's Eye with Peter Kelly and the late David Callister. Today, they're at the Lime Trees on Quarterbridge. If you're at Quarterbridge and head towards Peel, you see the Avenue of Lime Trees, which were planted to commemorate the Silver Jubilee of King George V. That's after Man in Line today. We're live at Quarterbridge with Peter Kelly, David Callister and the Lime Trees.
At Isle of Man Energy, we're excited to offer our customers the Alpha E-Tech Efficient Hybrid Gas Boiler and Heat Pump Combination. This state-of-the-art hybrid boiler causes minimal disruption to your existing heating system, making it simple to upgrade. Priced from just £65 a month and with 6-year warranty as standard, which can be extended to 10 years, what are you waiting for? Register for a free consultation at isleofmanenergy.im.
Sometimes you need to roll out an extra bed. Millichaps have a wide range of affordable and superior single and double folder beds to suit all budgets, including luxury pocket sprung options and a fabulous choice of sofa beds in a variety of styles and sizes. Perfect for home offices and spare rooms, and all in stock for speedy delivery when guests are expected. And don't forget the pillows and bedding, with plenty of choice available at Millichaps. For fold-up beds and more, visit Millichaps today.
Crossroads Isle of Man.
The Crossroads Manx Workshop helps islanders with disabilities and health conditions, providing paid employment, making a range of high-quality products. From benches and shelves to cabinets and tables, our team also work on custom projects, such as engraving and company seals. Pop into our workshop in Douglas.
Crossroads Isle of Man.
Visit crossroadsiom.org.
It's you, isn't it? You're the woman I watch from my train.
The Service Players present the Ireland premiere of The Girl on the Train at the Gaiety Theatre on the 27th to the 29th of June.
Was she scared of you? A drunken stranger shouting at her in the underpass?
I didn't want to hurt her. I don't remember.
This thrilling stage play is based on the international best-selling novel by Paula Hawkins and Hollywood movie, The Girl on the Train. Go to villagaiety.com for tickets. Supported by Manx Radio.
Get ready for your chance to win this bank holiday weekend here on Manx Radio. We've teamed up with Waltons to give you the chance to win a £300 voucher to spend in store. From first thing Saturday, just go to the Manx Radio Facebook page and identify the famous TV show. Then listen out for the window of opportunity across the bank holiday weekend and text your name and answer to 166177. We'll do the big prize draw on Tuesday afternoon with Alex. And also check out Walton's huge offers in store this Friday, Saturday and Bank Holiday Monday. You can also find them on Facebook or at waltons.im. Make this your winning weekend with Walton's and your nation station, Manx Radio.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Faster my good afternoon. We're talking about the Ravens today. Football Club Isle of Man. The Ravens formed in 2019. Of course, home ground is the Bowl. Paul Jones, manager. We're with Director of Football Lee Dixon. And the chair of FC Isle of Man is Jill Christian. I just want to hammer this down, Jill, because you seem to be intimating then that FC Isle of Man... and obviously nobody's getting paid. I mean, there are certain things you pay for, physio and things like that. That has to be paid for. So how long can you go? And you're fighting for sponsorship at the moment. I mean, are you losing money at the moment?
Yes. We, and in fact, I think we've lost money every season, but we've had support from various areas in terms of an underwrite, be that at one point a couple of the directors personally, another point now obviously we've got some support from Visit. But yeah, we are not an organisation that makes a penny. In fact, to the contrary, we lose money.
So how long can this go on?
As long as there is some support in the form of an underwrite, then we'll carry on. I think in an ideal, you know, there may be a benefactor that comes forward that can support us, or we may be fortunate. We may have to look at, you know, perhaps one day we may get lucky with a player that makes it big and becomes very generous. Yeah. The volunteer time is also a concern, because, you know, the amount of time it takes up, that and we need those volunteers to continue. So it's the financial support, but it's also time.
You may be an amateur club, but you have to adhere to professional standards, things like health and safety, stewards. I mean, the amount of stewards that you have to make sure that the crowd is safe and well maintained and gets in properly. None of those get paid.
No, none of those get paid. And, you know, they arrive at the ground sometimes 3:30 to start putting banners out, that we need the banners out for the sponsorship. And then at the end of the game, they have to take the banners away. So sometimes they may not leave the ground until sort of 9:30. So it's a huge commitment from the stewards on what can be a very wet and windy night as well.
OK, Rob Pritchard is the Manx Radio commentator who's at every match as well. And the commentary's gone down well. I mean, I'm not going to blow smoke anywhere, Rob, but the commentary has been going down very well.
We've been very lucky to have received some nice comments, both from supporters either on Ireland or off Ireland as well.
And how do you approach it? How do you approach the commentary? Because I know lots of commentators do lots and lots of preparation.
There is quite a bit of preparation in the background as well with regards to statistics, context and things like that, because just to give you a bit of an insight in terms of what's happening in a game, if there are sometimes large breaks in play, which can happen, it's always nice to provide a bit of context for the listeners, because some may not be tuning in from the first whistle, some may come in 15 to 20 minutes and then may dip out again after 45 minutes or 60 minutes or so. So it's painting a picture of not just what's happening on the pitch, but in some cases why it's happening, almost why teams may be performing the way they are, why they are doing what they're doing in a certain way. So there is a lot of preparation that goes on in the background,
And it's been very well received off Ireland, because obviously the AM transmitter goes here, there and everywhere, and teams do listen as well as online on actual radios.
They do indeed, yes. So obviously there is always the option, so it is the AM 1368 frequency or Manx Radio DAB, and that can also be accessed by the Manx Radio website as well, manxradio.com. and it just provides another opportunity, because of the fact that particularly for teams that are visiting from off Ireland as well, not just the players and coaching staff that have to make their way over here as well, but it is of a weekend. It's a big financial and time commitment for a lot of supporters as well, regardless, not just at this level but elsewhere, if you happen to make your way over to the Isle of Man for a weekend. And you know, a lot of people that are involved and follow these clubs, that they will have work commitments of their own, they'll have family and social commitments as well, so sometimes it just quite simply isn't possible even if they want to, and it just provides another option for those that aren't here on Ireland or at the game in person.
And I must say we must also mention sponsors of the football coverage, which is Celtic Manx, because without Celtic Manx obviously that wouldn't happen either, so we thank them as well. And who would have thought, was it Pascal Chimbonda who pitched up this year?
Yes, indeed, yes.
Who would have thought that? I mean, where else on the Isle of Man could you turn up and see Pascal? Just put it in context for anybody who's not a football fan.
So Pascal Chimbonda previously has been playing in the English Premier League, also a French international as well, and more recently this season he took up his first coaching role with Skelmersdale United, who have been relegated from the NWCFL Premier Division this season, but took over partway through the season. And during that time, before the trip to the Bowl to play FC Isle of Man, he was in fact operating as a player coach as well, just with regards to the players that they had available at certain times.
But he played a bit of the match, didn't he?
He did indeed, yes.
Did you ever think you'd see Pascal Chimbonda at the Bowl?
No, it's not something I considered 6 months previous, I'll be honest.
And that's the magic of football, Lee, isn't it? Football does all sorts of things to all sorts of people. It levels people out, for one thing, as well, and inspires people.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Of course it does. And I suppose all sports are like that, aren't they? You know, it's a level playing field. And when he came over, I don't know how old he was. He might be, lad. I said, is he in his 40s, Rob? And you could tell when he ran. He looked like he was in his 40s.
Oh, he was a midfield general, wasn't he?
To see him out on the pitch was obviously fantastic. And it was a great social media story, I suppose. And to see all
and
the
we
young...
won.
Do what, sorry?
And we won as
and
well.
We won, we won because he couldn't run. But to see all the kids down there getting photos, and to be honest, I'd heard mixed stories about him on the run up to coming to the island, but then the minute he turned up, he couldn't do enough for everyone, getting photos of all the kids and signing stuff, and it was never too much for him. And he lost his temper at the end of the game. I think he got sin-binned, didn't he, for the last 3 or 4 minutes of injury time. But yeah, he was a gentleman, to be fair, and he mixed well with everybody, and he couldn't have done enough. So it's amazing. No one would have thought he'd have maybe seen an ex-Premier League football player when this club was set up, playing on the Isle of Man for one of the teams.
You've got connections in football off the Isle of Man. Paul Jones has got connections off the Isle of Man. Have you ever been close to bringing talent from higher divisions to FC Isle of Man?
So no, it's not something that we've ever planned to do. When the club was set up, we always said it would always be about Manx-based players. Obviously, lads that go to university can be used, but there's only once we ever got close to it, and we were playing an away game when me and Chris were in charge of the team. We were playing an away game against Bursko on a Wednesday night, and we had 4 players pull out on the morning of the game, and we only had 11 outfield players. And I actually contacted Wigan Athletic, we're going to send us 3 of their youth team. We got them registered, we had them all registered, ready to go, and they left the training ground over in England. I don't think they wanted to come and be part of it, even though the club wanted them to. They left the training ground and they went AWOL, they turned the phones off, and we ended up getting 3 lads from our local college who we'd been out watching, and ironically every one of them scored that night. They come on as substitutes and they scored, so it was a blessing in disguise that they never turned up. I think we were losing 3-0 after 20 minutes, we won 7-4, and all 3 of the lads who come from college who'd never trained with us, we'd never met them, turned up at the airport with their stuff, come to the game, and all scored on their debuts. So that was an amazing experience, but that's the only time we've ever come close to it.
Lee, you run a building company as well.
I do, LD Developments.
How do you fit all this in?
All my lads are at work now, probably saying he fits it in because he's never on site and he doesn't do anything.
Actually, Mark dropped a note in to say, could you ask Lee, can I go home now because it's raining?
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. They'll be all in there now, slagging me off. Fortunately, I've got a great team of lads who get on with doing what they do for me, and it allows me to do all the bits we need done, meetings and organising stuff and that. And, you know, massive shout out to Big Babies Group that I'm part of, that's been slagging me off for the last hour. But yeah, listen, it's just it spreads further than we talk about what we're doing. But for instance, the lads at work in my company suffer because I'm not there all the time, but they just go about their business. They know ultimately that it's helping the club. Mark's son Dean is Dean Pennington, who plays for us. He's just been to Bury, so he understands the buy-in, and if he whinged, he wouldn't get paid. So
I wanted to talk about that, Jill. Finally, we're just about out of time. The amount of commitment that the players put in to play as many games as they do during the season, sometimes going away, travelling. There was a time when they were away for quite a period of time earlier on this year. Just talk about a bit of the commitment of the players.
Yeah, I think the commitment the players give and the players' families is unreal. It's not just the game days. You know, on a Saturday, if we're away, they might be getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning to get to the airport for a 7 o'clock flight, and the midweek fixtures as well, where they might have to leave work early, then they're making up time. But it's also the training. Aside from the training, it's a sort of hero worshipping of the kids that they have to give time to, and the extra work that they do in the community, visiting schools. Those are sort of an incredible bunch of ambassadors, and I think we're really fortunate that they have invested time into the club when they're not being paid. Okay. And yet they know almost every other player they play against is, so it's fantastic.
All right, no time wasters, by the way. If anybody is interested in supporting FC Isle of Man, the website is fcisleofman.im, and any phone number anybody can call you, Jill?
Well, I'm definitely not going to give my phone number for the reason that they said, but my email address is chair@fcisleofman.im.
Okay. Thanks for being with us today. Thank you, Lee. Good to see you today.
Thanks very much, Andy.
All right. Appreciate it. Thanks to Rob Pritchard. Forward with the Ravens.
WINT. 60 years serving you as the nation station. This is Manx Radio.
Eye, brought to you by Ellis Brown Architects.
Peter, at one of the busiest junctions in the Isle of Man, what's Kelly's Eye looking at today?
We're down at the Quarter Bridge, and a pair of gate pillars going into Portishead Meadow, and down beside the left-hand one is a plaque which we're looking at, and it says, "This line of trees was planted to commemorate the Silver Jubilee of His Majesty King George V, 1935.
Yes, that's what it says, but it isn't necessarily spot on and accurate for the time they were planted. Now, John Haig, the nurseryman who used to broadcast a lot on Manx Radio, told me, I'm sure, at one time that he planted these trees, or was a part of the planting team, in 1935. But you have a different view on that.
Well, as far as I know, they were planted by the children of Braddon. I mean, it wouldn't be every child, because there's not that many trees. They're lime trees, by the way.
They are.
And it's interesting that they were planted sufficiently far back that despite road widening and all the rest of it, they're still here. I seem to recall the late Peter Drinkwater saying that he was one of the Braddon children. He, unlikely to have been at Braddon School, but one of the Braddon children who planted the tree. And I think his mother had kept a programme of the day. But what goes through my mind is that they decided to plant these to commemorate the Jubilee, but they waited until the spring to
yes.
plant them, by which time the king had died.
That's right.
Now, do you know about the camels?
I don't.
Oh, well, when you come up the mountain road from Ramsey and look out over to Sky Hill, there always used to be a line, I think they were possibly pine trees, but they were always referred to by the coach drivers, the charabanc drivers, as the cowls. They looked like a camel trail on the top of the hill, rather like the sort of drawings you get on Christmas cards, one behind the other. And that was because the trees had become stunted and, of course, spread out, so they looked like camels. Well, the camels are few and far between, so if anybody wants a good project, let's have some camels back.
Many of the most iconic buildings around the island have been designed by Ellis Brown Architects. Keep up with Ellis Brown today on Facebook or via ellisbrown.in.
Part of island life for 60 years. This is your Manx Radio.